Welcome back, everyone, to Master of the Universe podcast. Joey Cage here with Christopher motherfucking J to the max. How's it going on tonight, man?
It's all good, man. It's all good.
Yeah, before we get into Halloween 6, going to let you guys know where to find us. We're on YouTube. Subscribe if you haven't. We're like at 103 subscribers right now, some shit. So check that out. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Podbean. We're also on Instagram. I forgot. But that's not
Google
for
podcast.
Yeah, Google Podcast. I'm on Instagram. It's Master of the Universe, Joey Cage. And our artwork's done by ManBeast01 on Instagram. Also, Gabe Rodriguez, ManBeast01, did our artwork of Mum Ra. I was thinking of like some badass different artworks that I want for the future. Because I was like, man, what if Mum Ra had like the Conan sword, dude, just to get himself over? Like he's collecting all the badass swords of the universe, you know, some shit like that. Anyway, we're going to be talking about Halloween 6, released in 1995. This is actually the first film released in the 90s for Halloween. So when we get back, Christopher Jay's going to let you know all about it.
Do you know why we celebrate Halloween? A long, long time ago, it was a night of great power. When the days grew short, all across the land, huge bonfires were lit. Oh, there was a marvelous celebration. And they dressed up in costumes, hoping to ward off the evil spirits, especially the boogeyman.
Okay, so one thing I want to touch on this is the fact that this film was released literally 7.5 months after the great Donald Pleasance, who carried these films, you know, minus Part 3 because it was a different story, but for the other four of the five, for 80% of this franchise, really, he's the guy carrying it. He died, I believe, of a heart attack. He had just turned 75. And out of respect to him, they waited to release this until, you know, some time had gone by. And at the end of the film, this isn't killing anything. At the end of the film, they do say in memory of, which I thought was nice, and that's, you know, good. Anyhow, the plot. On October 31st, 1989, Michael Myers and his niece, Jamie Lloyd, are abducted from the Haddonfield police station by the mysterious man in black and two of his henchmen. No, I'm not talking about Johnny Cash. No. Now, you know, they left you hanging in part
or
five. Or
Creighton Duke, right? That's his name?
Or Creighton Duke, yeah. He's not calling Michael Myers a little girl. That's one guy you don't call a little girl. and they left us hanging in part five wondering who that was, and you kept seeing Easter eggs of him throughout that movie. So now here we are. We waited 6 years. Now we're probably going to find out. So 6 years later, October 30th, 1995, Jamie, who is now 15 years old, has been impregnated, and her infant is born, being taken away by the man in black, revealed to be the leader of a druid-like cult. So those of you at home, just picture the Undertaker entrance every WrestleMania. Later, a midwife helps Jamie escape with her baby, but she is killed by Michael. Jamie and her baby flee in a stolen pickup truck, with Michael in pursuit. Meanwhile, Dr. Sam Loomis retired and moved into a cabin on the outskirts of Haddonfield, where he lives as a single hermit. He is visited by his friend Dr. Terrence Wynn, the chief administrator of Smith's Grove Sanitarium. Leave me be! Where Michael has been incarcerated as a boy, you know, and escaped at age 21. Wynn asks Loomis to return to Smith's Grove. They overhear Jamie's plea for help on a local radio station when she makes a call out to Loomis, only to be ignored by the radio DJ, or as I call him, wannabe Howard Stern, Barry Sims. Michael catches up with Jamie, and she crashes the truck into an old barn where he kills her, but finds that her baby is not in the truck, and her last words are, "You're not getting the baby."
Yeah, it sounds like every woman in the middle of a divorce, you know. So
I was gonna say it sounds like a child custody divorce, child support dispute, huh?
Yeah, just that's what that's been. Michael's just trying to get his kid back, dude. Not a big deal. I mean, that's just typical, you know, lovers and going through a dispute. But you know, this film's always branded as like a really bad film, the worst one of the franchise, and I'm just gonna come out and fucking say it. Like I pretty much enjoyed myself for this one. I mean, is it have a lot of stupid parts like part five? Yeah, but I like this a lot better just because they kept Michael in the dark. You know, all the stuff Chris said on the other one, but they actually did it to me really well here. They had, like I said, a lot of dumb shit. We'll talk about it, but I mean, overall, I had a good time. It was one of the first times where I sat down because we were, of course. We've talked about how we're trying to get all these films done, at least the original, you know, series with Jamie Lee Curtis's character that's in them, you know, not the Rob Zombie ones, but trying to get these done as quick as possible. So we, you know, we had like a day to watch it, and I was all like, I just got out of work, you know, like didn't really feel like sitting down to watch a movie, but I put it on, and after like 20 minutes, I'm like, okay, and then I was 40 minutes in, I'm like, okay, I'm halfway there, and I you know, good film, enjoyed it, but
Huh? I was like, this is going fairly well so far.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was. That's pretty good,
but,
you know.
I gotta say, and I told you this on our private messaging, but I'll just say it here too. Like, I enjoyed this film. I really did. It was not boring. I was not sitting there being strung along like, okay, where's it going to go? Okay, what are we doing? Okay. I mean, I got a little frustrated with knowing who the characters were in the first 20 minutes. That was frustrating because I'll tell you all this listening at home. When I watch these movies, I do not first read Wikipedia or IMDb or any website about it, and I don't watch YouTube videos about it because I want to go into it pretending like I'm the person in September of 95, go into the theater, paid the hard-earned money for a ticket to watch this movie, and I want to take it in as it's naturally to be taken in. If I read something about it, I'm going to have a prejudiced notion about it, and I'm going to have all kinds of preconceived ideas that may not necessarily hold up, and that's going to jade, jaundice my view of it. I want to have an organic, natural taking in of this movie. So, that being said, enjoyed it. The first 20 minutes were frustrating. I didn't know who the fuck Kara Strode was. I didn't know the woman giving birth was supposed to be Jamie Lloyd.
Yeah.
And that just, but for the record, I just got to say, that makes Michael Myers, he's already an incredibly nasty fuck, and he's a scary fuck, and he's a really sick fuck now. Because this guy by now is like my age. I'm going to be 38 next week. So he was 21 in 78, so that makes him 16 years later, 37. So this fuck is my age. Banging his 15-year-old niece. Who do you think he is, Jerry Lee Lewis?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's part of the stupid shit that I don't like about this film is that everyone's got to be related. Everyone's got to be connected. Everyone has to be from prior films. Like, they try and get the smallest characters or anybody that was named in the first, like, the, you know, they have the doctor, like Loomis's boss, Dr. Nguyen, come back, and they barely glance on him. I was just, you know, like reading like the references of like, was this guy supposed to be in the original? Because obviously him and Dr. Loomis are friends, and they're like, oh yeah, he's like the doctor that walks out with them, you know, right away. And I'm like, who the fuck's going to remember that? Like, people in 95 are not going to remember what happened in 78. You know, like nowadays, yeah, we do, because we can go anywhere and cross-reference and do shit, but it's just like, you know, back then people were like, who? Doctor Who? You know, Dr. Seuss? And then Tommy Doyle, and I'm probably going to end up calling him Tommy Jarvis at one point in this film, because it's like part six, Tommy's Friday the 13th. But yeah, Paul Rudd comes out, dude. Everyone knows who Paul Rudd is, dude. And he plays Tommy Doyle. And like, I enjoyed it because it's somebody relatable to me as a guy. You know, because part of this film, what annoyed me is that there are so many, like, kids in here, or at least a baby. You have a baby, they're watching around. I'm like, oh, my God, why is this baby here? You're hearing him cry. And then we have little Danny, who's just thrown in there because Michael Myers was a killer as a kid, so let's have another kid that's, you know, and Jamie Lloyd, you know, was a girl that might have killed, but they're not going to turn them into killers anyway, so why even have them here? But
And I'm sitting there at the beginning of this movie watching this. They've got, they've got a baby on this, like, druid offering table, whatever the fuck it is, with we're going to later find out is the thorn, insignia, constellation, whatever. And they got a knife, and they're marking it with the blood for the symbol. And I'm sitting there watching this, like, this is a real baby. This isn't fucking CGI shit. This is a real fucking infant. And I'm like, you sick fucks. I mean, I know it's a movie, and obviously you're not going to really kill a baby, but I'm like, if you sick fucks do this in this movie, I'm already going to check out.
Yeah, when that whole intro was really weird. I was like, what the fuck's going on? Because it starts off with her, like, being taken down these corridors, Jamie Lloyd, like you said. And I kind of knew that going in. Like, I only heard things about this film. I had never seen it in full. This is my actual first time watching it yesterday. All that's going on, the nurse helps her escape. And I'm like, why is this nurse helping her escape now? Like, she hasn't been, like, she didn't know that these were bad people, obviously. Like, let me help you, you know, escape Jamie. And it's like I actually enjoyed, like, the first death of the nurse, because, like, she's there, like, you know, I guess her and Jamie get separated or whatever, and then Michael comes from the shadows, and he looks way bigger and bulkier and menacing, his mask, on this film than the past two films, for sure, and even the second one. But he comes in from behind, just picks her up, you know, and puts, like, a spike through her fucking head or whatever, and lets her just hang there. I was like, all right, dude, so Michael's back and kicking some ass, dude, and she takes off, and then I was laughing because she's like in a truck, right? It's raining like all hell, and she decides to stop at the bus station. I'm like, why are you, like, just keep driving? What the fuck?
Okay, you know the Geico commercial from, and they play it like every Halloween season. Oh, the teenagers run away, and why don't we go into that barnyard full of chainsaws? No, why don't we jump in the running car? Yeah. That is so fucking mad right there. Like, this dude, drunk dude's out there taking a piss or doing whatever, and he leaves his truck running, and she just happens to, you know, find that and jump in. And by the way, it's got plenty of gas to make it wherever the fuck she's got to go to get away.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. When she gets into his truck, Michael twists his fucking head off, and, like, that's brutal. When I saw, like, this first intro, I was like, wow, man, he's already, like, destroying motherfuckers, which was great. But yeah, she gets off at the bus station, and of course, dude, I have to call it out, like, there's no one there at all, and the guy's, I'll be back in 20. I'm like, man, he must have had a really big burrito or something. Be back in 20 minutes, you know? And, you know, because, like, where else can you go but the shitter with that kind of weather? Like, why would you want to, like, drive around anywhere? You know, so she's there. She puts she puts the baby in, like, a cabinet, and she ends up taking off. And for whatever reason, Michael doesn't hear the baby when he, like, go. Like, of course, he, like, knows exactly where to find her, and then he goes, you know, after on the road. Runs her down.
I like how they made him menacing. Like, this is the kind of element I like in a scary movie. She's hiding in this empty bus stop, dark, rainy at night, and here he is coming down the stairs pursuing her. Like, that's good.
Yeah, you know, yeah, they have that. They're building up to it, like Chris likes to say. Like, you know, I think he's opening up the stalls or something as he's going down there, or whatever doors, like, one by one. And then he sees, like, there's a window open. I don't remember exactly. Only seen it once. But, yeah, then he knows, like, she's gone. And, of course, he catches up to her. I started laughing. I'm like, Michael Myers catches up to everyone no matter where they're at, dude. That motherfucker teleports and shit. And so he catches up to her, like, right away. Like, she ends up getting off and goes to, like, a barn or something like that.
Yeah, escapes through that window, gets into it. Luckily, by pure luck, sees this fucking... Yeah, you know, gets back in the truck, goes to the barn, and I don't know what it is he even hung her on. It looked like three little hedge trimmer device things.
I was gonna tell you, because I was like, I had no idea what the fuck he, like, picked her up and slammed her on. It's some kind of, like, yeah, like, I've got farm device or whatever, and he ends up turning on the device, and I'm assuming it's to trim something out there, of course. But yeah, exactly, it does look like hedge trimmers, but, like, whatever, I guess. Industrial size hedge trimmers, and kills her. And then while we're doing that, there's, like, a radio station that's going on the whole time, a radio show or some shit like that, and they're, like, talking about Michael Myers, or is that the next day or some shit.
It might be that I don't remember, but I know that there is, and I know that, like, at one point that's when Jamie calls in to ask for Dr. Loomis to help, because the fucking of course 911's out, they're busy, so they can't get to her call right away. What good is 911 if they don't answer right away, right?
Yeah.
But it's an emergency. But anyhow, so then she dies that night, and then you hear again, it's that fucking DJ Barry Sims, and of course, like, that's one of the things I have to give this movie props, because Howard Stern in 94, 95 was all the buzz, all the talk of the town. Mm-hmm. You know, you always saw him on TV. You always heard him about him on TV, all this shit. And he was Mr. Controversial, been fired from radio station after radio station until K-Rock in New York City took him out. Well, anyway, so they got this imitation Howard Stern, and he's got the Shock Jock show. And everyone's calling in with their conspiracies on Michael Myers. Like, some people think he's like a CIA asset now.
Yeah, but it's funny because they had talked about it that Howard Stern was actually supposed to play this part. I don't know if you knew it, but I had just found out about it like the other day. Yeah, that part was specifically made for Howard Stern. His name's Harry something, but or HS. I forget. What's that DJ's name?
Barry Sims.
Barry Sims. It was supposed to be HS. I forgot what the fuck anyway. But yeah. During that radio station show, Paul Rudd's character, Tommy Doyle, calls in. And I was laughing the whole time because Paul Rudd, like, you could tell this is his first acting job and shit. And he's not, like, bad when he's acting normal or just being, like, doing his scenes. But when he's, like, starts talking about Michael Myers, I don't know if it's the direction they gave him or what, but he's like, I remember when I first saw him. You know, he's
like... You could tell it's probably his first major movie role, and I mean he's very young there. He's probably what 23,
and some shit, yeah.
And I mean the whole time because it just I think of him, and right away I go to 40-year-old virgin. I'm waiting for him to say someone, you know, I know you're gay.
Yeah, he's awesome in that, dude. You know you're gay. You know that bullshit. I remember when I first saw that, I was like, this movie's awesome because all those dudes are great characters. Him and. What's that, the hairy guy, the hairy... Seth Rogen, that guy. So everyone is great. Anyway, but so he's talking, and then they mentioned, like, Dr. Loomis, too, and he's like, not dead, but very much retired. His voice is completely gone. It's sad because, like, he's so known for his voice, you know? He's like, I shot him 6 times and yelling and being loud and, like, you know, all that crap, and now it's like he's completely, you know... worn out of it already, you know. He's an old ass man, and
I mean, I, as someone who's you know around a lot of guys that age, like, I mean, I've seen with my dad, like the way my dad was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and how he is now,
yeah.
And this is a man who's going to be 75 in a couple weeks. I mean, like, yeah, when you get to be in those 70s, like, it tones you down a lot.
Yeah, exactly. He was 75 during this, but yeah, exactly. I mean. Especially the, you know, when you get up in age, every 10 years is like a completely different, you know, you. You know, even me now, 33, when I was 23, I mean, completely different me. And then before that, I was 13. Come on, forget about it. So, yeah, 10 years is a long time for him. And, yeah, so, I mean, it was sad to see him like that. But it was still cool to see him anyway, you know. And in the producer's cut, I'll probably mention it here and there. We're watching the director's cut for those motherfuckers that care. But I'll mention parts from the producer's cut because I didn't actually watch the film, but I watched a bunch of reviews just to get the – because the reviews actually took those parts and let you know what was different. And from what I understand is that the producer's cut has a lot more Donald Pleasance in there, and they have, like, a lot more explanation, which is good. So, I mean, there's things like that that are in there that probably would have made things, like – or explain things way better, like they talk about why Donald Pleasance doesn't have the scars from that he did on the previous films. He's like, oh, skin grafts, you know, whatever. And what the real reason was because, you know, Donald Pleasance didn't want to put on makeup. He's fucking, you know, on his final year there. He's like, I'd put on no makeup. So they do a lot of explanations. And, of course, dude, the most overseen in the business, the one I showed you earlier, like... hello monsters or hello ghouls, don't mess with Danny, y'all know the rules. And then it ends, that's it.
I'm seeing that, and I'm like, again, maybe if I'd watched Producer's Cut, it would have made a little bit more sense. But I'm watching this, and I'm like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah, well, like that, and well, the thing too, when we meet Danny in the beginning of the film, and he's having all those flash, like it's kind of like telepathy kind of powers or brainwash shits going on in his head, the same way kind of Jamie Lloyd is. He's seeing Michael walk across the street with the lightning flashing. He's seeing the man in black, and he's telling him, like, the man's there, and he's, like, telling me to do these things, Mom, and he's, and she's really fine, this chick, Kara Strode. She reminds me a lot of April O'Neil in the Ninja Turtles film. What's it called? But, yeah, she's – and if my my girl hears me say that, she don't like me saying that I think girls are fine. But
I mean, she's got that – yeah, that's understandable. Hey, no, there's no such thing as a fine girl if you're listening, by the way. But she's got that, like, that mid to late 90s stereotype of beauty, like this, like her,
yeah.
Or like the Sarah Jessica Parker, or like your – what's her name? What's the chick that played Ally McBeal? I can't remember her name.
Nancy.
Yeah, Nan, that's it. And it, like, it's that, it's kind of that chick, you know, and that's who this girl is playing, Kara Strode.
Yeah, I saw her and I'm like, who are these new characters? Because again, I've never seen it. So like the way I guess you are when you're like, oh, because I mean I've seen like the beginning or the stories basically about the Curse of Michael Myers Part 6, you know, and. So I knew, okay, they killed Jamie right away because that's a big shocker. Like, what the fuck? You have this main character and you just kill her off. And they actually didn't have Danielle Harris come back for Jamie Lloyd because she was underage, I believe, and for her to be able to do whatever she needed to do or work the hours, whatever she had to do, certain things that cost her money. So she at least wanted the cost that they, like, to you know, what it was going to cost her to be able to work on it to be paid for. And they wouldn't even pay for that, so it's like, well, yeah. So
probably would have been doing some, like, I think people like this, they do an independent study.
I don't know.
That costs money.
Yeah, I don't know what it was going to be, but it was allowing her to basically work, being under A. I forgot the exact. I heard it the other day, but she basically just wanted to be able to come out in the film, even if it was this. But you know, she says that, and then they were saying, well, they, you know, she wanted more money, whatever. But it would have been nice to see her, but. I mean, I would have liked a better script. I love this. I don't absolutely love this film, but I like this film a lot. But I would have liked to have seen Daniel Harris's story told and, you know, better, and at least something like if they you could have kept Paul Rudd, Tommy Doyle, have Danielle come back. Just don't start off killing her with the fucking baby and shit like that. You know what I mean? With it, like you could have left all that out. Just bring Daniel Harris, come back. You know, but this thing's like all over the place. Basically, Michael's. Under this control, how would you explain like the relationship with this cult of Michael Myers? Like for anybody that doesn't know what this film's about, it's like this group of people.
I didn't view him as being under anybody's. Just if I'm just reading the body language and how they're all interacting with each other, if I'm just knowing what I know about Michael Myers and just seeing what they're doing, I didn't see them like plotting behind his back. I didn't see anybody bossing him around telling him what to do. I mean, who would? But like, I mean, I just interpret it as like he's like the. Forgive me for saying it, the God man, and like they're all his like apostles, servants, whatever, and they're like his fervent disciples, like trying to make this all happen, this fucking cult of death, this fucking real fucking daily yearly Bilderberg thing. Yeah, I mean, not Bilderberg, Bohemian Grove. Bohemian Grove, we all seen that video, and that's something that happens, like these scumbags, you know, they go there once a year for this shit, and they got the cremation of care and all that. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of that element Easter egg throughout this film, especially in those scenes where at that mental hospital that's been converted to his temple. However, this is something that it's like a long-term, day-to-day going on thing, and to me, he's like the demigod of it, and like the man in black is like, you know, his prime minister or whatever.
Well, I say that because, what's it called? At the end, or towards the end, you know, once they get, like, we're fast-forwarding, of course, jumping around, but when they ask Loomis, Dr. What's his name? Wynn asked Loomis, like, take my place. I'm like, take your place? Like, Dr. Loomis is on his fucking deathbed damn near, right? And he wants to take his place as, like, Michael's watcher, protector, or his spot. And so, like, basically, like, Michael, from what I understand, Michael has to kill, like, his entire family to save hundreds. Because, well, I think Tommy explains it through the computer, and you see all these different things. And how the Cult of Thorn signs in the sky, and, you know, sacrificing one family to save hundreds of others, or hundreds of thousands of others, whatever the fuck it is, you know, it's like this, it's kind of like,
it's convoluted. So I think he says that every year, like, a child from each tribe has to be sacrificed in order to save the whole community or whatever.
Yeah, that's so that bullshit. So it's kind of like, okay, whatever. But I mean, I still enjoyed the film. I didn't look too much into the whole reasoning why. You don't have to give a reasoning why to Michael. Well, Michael Myers is a maniac, but they decided to do it. But we meet, you know, the Strode family, who's Biff Tanner, whose name John Strode, who's him and his wife are named after John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, the original producers and the director from the original.
Not aware of that.
But Biff Tannen, and then the mom, she's from Better Off Dead. Have you seen Better Off Dead?
I remember all the commercials for it, but I never saw it.
Dude, we're gonna have to review that one anyway. But that's the mom. I'm like, where have I seen her before? Because she looks so different. But it's probably been, 13 years, 12 years since that movie came out compared to the way she looks now.
And remember that this family, this John Strode and his wife Deborah, they're supposed to be like, I think the John is the brother of Laurie Strode's, I guess, foster father.
No, so are they? Well, I'm so confused. Why is he killing the Strodes? if he's a Myers.
Yeah, it's a weird. It's like the Hatfields and McCoys kind of thing, I guess. But yeah, that's the thing. It's John Strode is the brother of the first Strode gentleman, father, whatever, who had lived there in '78, and then he took over the house from his brother because he is John's a real estate agent, an alcoholic real estate agent at that. And he couldn't sell the house because everyone in the community knew what had gone on there. Yeah. So they just move in there. Now, Deborah is going to later find this out. So you never told us that, you know, that was the Myers house and da-da-da. So we're leaving, you know.
It was cool when she was talking about it because you see Michael in the background, Mr. Teleportation. You know, he's like all of a sudden just standing there. And I was like, oh, fuck, you know. She dies pretty hardcore. I was laughing. I told you, like, she runs out the back of the house. And then, like, if you don't know your own backyard, then you're in fucking trouble, right? So she turns and she, like, runs into the fence and he kills her with an axe. And I'm like, oh, my God. In between all this, like, the dad, like, he comes back all drunk. And when he dies, it's awesome because, like, he goes to the basement. Like, that's, like, the most brutal kill. Like, I think Michael puts him on some kind of, like, that little what would you call that bullshit?
What do you call it, the breaker box?
Yeah, the breaker. And he's all shaking, foaming at the mouth, and his fucking head explodes. I was like, are you
Which is absolutely preposterous. I've never heard of anything exploding on anybody from being electrocuted. I mean, that better be some fucking, like, an entire power station going through somebody. But, like, he comes home drunk as fuck from his work day. He's stressful, and he's got his own issues anyway. He comes home. The power's out. The lights are out. And, you know, he can't get it back on. And even the mom was having trouble with the power when she was in the basement with the washing machine. So now here he is, fast forward, she's dead, and he comes home. Power's out. He goes downstairs to the basement, thinks he's going to mess with the breaker box. But somehow, the washing machine is still running. So I guess the washing machine is natural gas powered.
And after all that crap, at some point through all this crazy madness, they kind of have a flashback of, like, the original Halloween. I think Tommy drops a pumpkin or some shit. Tommy does. And then Danny runs into Tommy, and he drops the pumpkin. I remember seeing that just because I remember seeing it. I was like, oh, it reminds me of part one. And What's-Her-Face comes home. Kara, fine as fuck, comes home asking about her mom. And I'm like, when I come home, I never come home, Mom. I mean, of course, I don't live with my mom, but when I did, or if I did, I wouldn't be like, Mom, making it all awkward. I'd just be like, hey, Mom, she don't answer. Well, okay, she's not here, and I'll just start walking around. But they made it seem, you know, like...
Right. She has no reason to presume her mom is dead. But the other thing...
She's she's like nonstop going around the backyard, going upstairs. Mom, like, she's... Like, that's not, like, a natural, to me, a natural behavior, you know what I mean? So I was kind of, like, chuckling at it, dude.
It's not, unless the whole Michael Myers and it being Halloween Eve and all that stuff has really gotten into her head, which might be the only logical explanation for that.
But she doesn't even know about Michael Myers yet, does she? Before Tommy? Yeah, she doesn't even know about it, because when she goes upstairs, that's when... Jump scare. Like, that's the thing, too, that I laughed about, is that, like, she's saying, Mom, the whole, for, like, it feels like 5 minutes. She goes upstairs and her son's in the room with Tommy Doyle. I was like, that's kind of weird, but all right.
Yeah, my son's playing with a grown man, but in the bedroom alone with the door closed. But yeah, no,
what the fuck?
I'm totally with you and Mr. Shadow on that. Having said that, I gotta say it's the Easter egg there when he drops the pumpkin and runs into Tommy Doyle. If you blink, you will miss this. And even if your eyes wide open, you might still miss this. But fucking Michael Myers is standing in the distant background by a van.
Oh no, shit! I didn't know that. No, now I'm gonna have to rewatch it, Keith. But I don't even know Decker had mentioned that. But I just saw that. I'm like, how? Because just me thinking about it. I'm like, she's calling out, and no one's saying anything to Kara, and they're in the fucking room. Let's just say I'm worried about some kid's well-being because I know something. I'm saying, hey, let's go to your house. Let's sit in the front porch. You know what I mean?
Or sit in the living room so people see me in an open environment when they come home.
Exactly. Like, we're not going to go up your stairs in your bedroom and close the door. No. We're going to be in front so everyone knows that I'm here waiting for you. Your mom knows I'm outside waiting for you. And I'm going to say, hey, I'm kind of worried about, this Michael Myers character. And they're going to say, why? Well, because he tried to fucking kill me. So, yeah, that's
what... Let me tell you something. My mom... Oh, there he is. No, you know what? Okay, I'm looking at that scene now. Because I had seen this when I was taking notes the second time last night, when I watched it last night. Mm-hmm. And that was why I didn't catch it the first time. I caught it the second time. But I'm watching it here a third time. It's not Michael Myers. It's the fucking dude, the man in black.
I didn't see that part, but I did see that in a review where they show him, and I'm like, I would have missed it. Tommy's there, and he starts telling – he brings Kara and Danny over to his house, who he stays with. It's like a halfway house, or what do you call it? Not even a halfway house, but like a
– it's just a boarding house.
Boarding house. Halfway house.
I guess he's like a college student or something.
But yeah, some shit. And we meet this Blankenship, and she's all like zoned out half the time. And we see her later on in the film – or earlier in the film because like I think once Kara's got a brother. I think his name's
– Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Tim, I think, is the name of the brother.
Yeah.
And she's out there fucking raking leaves and shit, and he says, I don't, and she says nothing.
Yeah, she's just zoned out. And when they walk in there, she's zoned out. And then, like, when Danny's there with Miss Blankenship or whatever, Mrs. Talking Shit, she starts like, do you know why Halloween? And she's like all completely like, I knew right away when that was shown. I was like, oh, this bitch is fucking, something's up with her. Like I said, I've never seen this film. Like, I knew... Dr. Wynn was a bad guy, but I had no idea this chick was in on it too. Yeah. But of course, it just makes sense. She's across
fucking
the street.
Fucking Dr. Wynn reminds you of the fucking prince. I know it's two different actors, but he reminds you of the principal in Breakfast Club, and also the bad guy cop in fucking every movie he ever plays a cop in.
Well, I know he's a bad guy in Lethal Weapon. Whatever his name is, Mitchell Ryan. But so he's telling her the whole story, which we touched upon earlier, and after all that, we kind of go to hang out with Tim and his chick. I think her name's Beth, and they're at that. Jumping around, like Tommy mentions that he's like, in the producer's cut, it's kind of explained on why Dr. Loomis is at the hospital, because when I watched it, it's the first thing I said. I'm like, why the fuck is Dr. Loomis at the hospital? It makes no sense that Tommy's going to show up. I need a doctor. I need a doctor now. And then, of course, he gets security called on him, like, way in the beginning of the film. And then he runs into Dr. Loomis. He's like, do I know you? And all that crap. I'm like, why is Dr. Loomis there? That makes no sense. Well, Dr. Loomis was there because in the producer's cut, Jamie Lloyd survives the fucking – that – Michael Myers beatdown and she's in the hospital, so that's why he's there. So yeah, that I was like, oh, okay, well now I understand, but there's nothing said about that. So I'm like thinking, like, why the fuck is he there? And Tommy's you know fucking just runs out of there. Meet me at whatever, which was like that party at 9. I forgot what he called it.
It's the town, like, it's the first time I forget what it's called, festival or whatever, but it's the first time in all these years that they're going to be celebrating Halloween, because the whole town has kind of made it, like, I don't think necessarily law, but they've made it taboo to have anything to do with Halloween. And, like, even drunk Biff, real estate agent dad, he comes home, these dumbass kids put a thing in his front yard, he grabs a fucking axe and starts, like, chopping it down. You damn kids!
Yeah. God, that old Paul routine. But yeah, so I'm like, why the fuck, like, why don't you just get Dr. Loomis and y'all stick together now? Like, I'm gonna go meet you at 9. Like, you know the odds of y'all both surviving, or at least you surviving with the baby till 9. I'm like, I'm not leaving your side, you know what I mean? Like, if some shit's going down like that. But anyway,
knowing what y'all both know.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I'll see you at 9. What the fuck? And like, no, I was like, Dr. Loomis, like, just the guy I was looking for. Hey, I got fucking fucking Danielle Harris's fucking daughter fucking here, Jamie Lloyd's daughter, you know, like, I mean, or kid or whatever the fuck. His name's Steve in the producer's cut. So all that's going on. They end up getting like trapped at Tommy's place. Like, all of a sudden the fucking helpers for the Cult of Thorn, they drug Tommy and Dr. Loomis. Kara jumps out the window. I thought she died for sure. So, like, I mean,
me
you don't
too. I was, you, like, jump like that and you land on broken glass.
I was like, oh well, she's dead. I was like, well, that's a bummer. And then they wake up at the fucking, like you said, that temple bullshit at the hospital, or worshiping bullshit at the hospital and all that. And Tommy goes and looks fine. Tommy goes, and he's like, I remember it said like maximum security or something. Yeah, and he's all
and
like,
they come out of that, like, if they're supposedly, like, they hit him from like they knock all those guys out, and then Dr. Loomis and Tommy Doyle, they're just all of a sudden out of nowhere. 1 second later, they're standing up conscious. They're not selling like they just came out of unconscious. They're just there, normal, and it's like, oh, okay, so they were unconscious, now they're awake again.
Yeah, yeah, all that bullshit. And, like, this was pretty cool, like, I forgot how, but he ends up running into Kara. Oh, she's locked in the room, right? Some bullshit, and he breaks the thing down with a fire extinguisher or something like that. And
that scene was fucking great, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, what did you like about it, dude? I mean, 'cause
what
I know
I liked about that scene was that it's fucking... Here you're in the belly of the beast. You're in the enemy's lair, their territory. And you're in this hallway, which is a confined space. And you've got this guy that nobody human, no mortal man can own, because he's fucking somehow, some way supernatural. And he's fucking strong, and he can take the hits. And so what are you really going to do to him? He's coming your way, and you're on his territory. What the? And you don't have a gun. What are you going to do?
Or a putter. Or a putter. Yeah.
Or a pepper spray or whatever, yeah. So he wears a mask, so pepper spray doesn't do a whole hell of a lot. But the thing, what are you going to do? And you're over there with a fucking... You could use that fire extinguisher on him, because we've seen that work in part fucking 4. Mm-hmm. But now you're using this to break the door open so you can get to Kara, and you can both try to escape together, get the baby, and both try to escape together. And he's come and come and come, and he does like Michael Myers does, like... No sense of urgency. He's just walking your way, and you know you can't do a whole lot about it.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. You felt the tension build up because of the enclosed area there and like, all the bars and crap and shit. And they end up hiding, and then you see like they have Danny and the baby there, and Dr. Wynn and a bunch of his, like, whatever you want to call them, his helpers. And then Mike,
who earlier, it's just not, sorry to cut you off, but just who, Dr. Wynn, who earlier had Loomis, you know, clocked in the back of the head and knocked unconscious.
Yeah, he was telling him to take his spot. That's what we were talking about way, way earlier. But yeah, he has him knocked out. And at that point, Michael, like, he goes and sees, like, some kind of weapon. I think it's a big old kind of machete-looking knife or some shit on the outside. And all of a sudden, he just starts killing everyone. So that's, like, that's the end of the Cult of Thorn, like, as far as the... That whole whatever religion, he ends up killing everyone. They're able to get the baby and Danny out of there. They take off. They end up going to some other area. Loomis is awake again. They inject him with some kind of, I don't know what the fuck it is. Tommy that, does.
Whatever that, I wish it's, I guess it's supposed to be similar to what it was in Freddy vs. Jason that they use on fucking, on fucking Dead, that Freddy injects into fucking Jason and shit.
Yeah.
Because, like, remember in this one here, by the way, that was a swerve I didn't see coming. Because, like, I didn't see fucking Michael Myers turning on his own followers, his own devotees. I didn't see that happening, and he just turns it into a fucking bloodbath. They can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah, that's what freaked me out. I was all like, I guess he just, I mean, what do you expect as Michael Myers, dude? You think he's going to follow, you know, y'all's rules? And they talk about the Samhain bullshit. Wasn't that from part three or I mean.
That's, and that keeps coming up in all these, like post part two is where it very first came up, but it was just one word, one mention, nothing else. Mm. Then in part three, the CEO Irish guy in that town explains what Samhain is. And then you hear it again, part four, you hear it again, part five. But now, here's Tommy Doyle expanding on it, explaining the Thorn Constellation and you're like, a sacrifice has to be made on that night because you're going into the season of darkness and death and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Prior to all this, we kind of jumped around, but I just wanted to touch upon it because we had mentioned him, the DJ or whatever radio guy. When they're at the party and they're like, oh, you know, you live at the Myers house? And the guy goes to his fucking car, like, as he's trying to, like, set up something with somebody. And, like, Michael knows, I guess, that this is happening and just appears in that guy's fucking van in the backseat.
Well, he called him a pussy. It doesn't help that he called him a pussy on that cell phone.
Yeah, but I'm like, why the fuck is Michael Myers going to know this guy's going to head to his house in the back? And he's in the back. I just thought it was, like, typical Halloween, like, you know, Michael's teleporting everywhere. No one saw him, and I was just chuckling because, like, that's the way this whole movie is. It's just, like, all the craziness. He just shows up and, like,
he's fucking omnipresent and omniscient.
Yeah, and then he shows up back at the house and kills, whatever his name is.
Tim and Beth?
Yeah, exactly. He kills them both after they do it. He's like, hey, babe, or whatever.
He goes to the shower because they go into that house. And again, mom's dead from earlier that day. Dad's dead from a couple hours probably ago. And the power has been out for both of them. Now, you come home at nighttime from a fucking Halloween party, and no one's flipping on lights, no one's doing anything, and they go upstairs, you know, to the bedroom to bang. And all they say is, hey, why don't we get some candles going and shit like that?
Son of a bitch, yeah.
And he's in the shower, he's getting out, and when he's in that shower, I'm like, oh, by the way, before I get to that, when the fucking DJ, when the shock is hanging up in the tree and his blood is dripping, and the little girl is saying,
it's raining red,
and I'm like, and you know what I'm saying during that scene to myself?
Huh.
I'm saying to myself, please, dear Lord, do not screw this up even and make it cornier than it is by giving Michael Myers the power to make the sky rain down blood. Please do not do that. So that's... That's number one. And then we get back, but back to the scene, back to Tim and Beth banging in the house with no power, and they just randomly decide it's a good idea to have candles on so they can see when they fuck. Now, he goes into the shower, and you know, just from Freddy movies, Jason movies, whatever, I'm saying to myself, either that water's going to get scorching hot, or it's going to get super fucking cold, or if the shower's going to start pouring out blood, or something is going to happen in the shower. Well, it didn't. I was wrong. But he asks for a towel, she gives him the towel, and now the mirror is cloudy, of course, it makes sense. But he, first of all, you have a towel in your hand, and you're going to wipe the mirror with your hand, you're just going to get fingerprints on it, you're going to have to get the Windex and clean it again, so why did you not just use the towel? Well, anyway, boom, clean slit throat, and you knew it was going to happen, but it was still done well.
Yeah, you're like, well, how big is this fucking restroom that he can't see Michael Myers behind him when he's getting out of the fucking shower and making a left turn, looking to the mirror? You're like, is this a 20 by 20 bathroom, or I mean, how did Michael Myers come out of the, you know what I mean, just shit like that where it's like, you know, it's dumb, but you still enjoy it anyway, you know.
But didn't you know Mark designed the bathroom, Mark renovated the bathroom in that house so it was that big?
Something he would do. Yeah, fucking he's like, I can't be in any bathrooms that are smaller than most people's master bedrooms. Yeah. So after all that happens, you know, at the end, we kind of jumped around, but at the end, Tommy injects him, finally starts beating him with the, he lays the pipe down, as the Dr. Loomis escorts Kara and Danny and the baby through the elevator, and he kind of like walks away kind of funny, you know, towards the end or whatever. And then I'm waiting for Michael to come back, because like when he's beating them with that pipe, like a bunch of like phantasm yellow blood's coming out of Michael or whatever from that shit that he injected in him. And of course, when they flash back to it, like the mask is there, but Michael's not or whatever the fuck. But it's yeah. fun. It's funny because like they're like, "Why don't you come with us?" And he's like, "I've got some unfinished business to attend to, or business to attend to, or whatever the fuck."
As a tribute to our listeners, can I play the recording of it?
Sure.
Yeah, let's fucking do it, man.
The real one, though, dude. The real one that I sent.
Yep. All right. Where the fudge is it? Okay, here we go.
And then he takes a shit. So, Chris, man, what do you give Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, and overall thoughts, man?
Because it was fun and it was thrilling and that kind of thing, I'm going to give it an 8. But the storyline left a lot to be criticized, and some of the acting was not the greatest in the world, but, you know, I can look past it for the thrill it gave me, so I'm going to give it an 8.
You know, everyone talks shit about this film, and I understand why, but as far as fun, I mean, Mark always laughs and talks about it, you know, himself. It's like, what do you expect from a Halloween film? This is why you watch films like these, right, just to have fun. So for me, definitely got to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Thought it was really good, had a lot of fun. It's, you know, one of the films that I'll definitely watch again. It's perfect, you know, cliche to say, but Halloween fun, dude. It's a film you can watch on Halloween. Just nothing. It don't take itself too seriously. It gives you, you know, Michael Myers. You know, sure, I'd like to see Daniel Harris and a better story, but hey, it's fucking, you know, it's the sixth sequel in a fucking franchise, you know. So fuck it, it's the weekend. I hope
if
you guys.
If there's any kind of quality to the sixth film of a franchise, then hey, you gotta applaud it, because by then it gets usually so watered down.
Freddy's dead. Chris is talking to you. So hope you guys enjoyed it. Next film, of course, we're gonna be doing is Halloween H2O, coming out soon. Like I told you guys in the beginning, like, subscribe, share, you know, write us comments, whatever. And we'll see you guys on the next one.